Is everyone ready? The next case is number 09-1457, Marktech LLC against Johnson & Johnson and Cordis Corporation. Mr. Leach.
Good morning. May it please the court. In Phillips, this court held its bedrock principle that the claims of a patent define an invention. This court's law is also clear that there is a distinction between product claims and process claims, and a novel product that meets the criteria of patentability is not limited to the process by which it is manufactured. In this case, the district court erred by failing to follow these basic tenets of claim construction when it adopted constructions inconsistent with
some... You got a problem. The prosecution history suggests heat bondable. That's your central problem. And tell us why we shouldn't read the prosecution history.
Absolutely.
I don't think general rules of claim construction necessarily going to operate. To answer the question here.
Thank you, Your Honor. We'll go right to that issue. And that's what I was going to get to, is the bonded enemy, the surgical device implant, and the expandable in part to the briefs, unless the court has questions on those particular issues. But I will start and focus on the bonded issue.
Okay.
The district court construed the term bonded to mean bonded by the application of heat. There's no question that everyone, the district court, my opponents, my client, all understand what the term bonded is. That is a common term. Their product is bonded. There's no question about that. The question becomes, do we need to read in a processing limitation to this product claim because of five words that were used in the prosecution history?
No, it's more than five words.
Well, you know,
I mean, that's awfully dismissive. You've got a problem here.
Well, it's not just, in my view, at least, the prosecution history. It's the claim language as well as the language in the spec concerning the summary of the invention.
Well, if we could turn to the, and I'll take those in turn, if we turn to the claim language, again, the claim language talks about bonding. It does not talk about bonding by the application of heat. In fact, the claim
Well, it talks about the application of heat in claim one.
Well, it talks about a characteristic. Just as I can claim a flexible pen, infringe, if this pen is flexible, this pen can infringe even if I don't do this, because it has the characteristics of that claim. So the fact of the matter is, the claim elements I believe that Your Honor is talking about are the fact that it has to have the characteristic. The polymer must have be capable of being non-flowable, non-adherent room temperature, and becoming flowable, tacky, and adherent upon the application of heat. There's no question, no dispute that their polymer meets that limitation. It's whether or not we have to read in this processing limitation, which we find in Claim 8. And in fact, during the prosecution, the examiner specifically said, and this is from the prosecution history, that the...
But wait, I mean, in terms of the claim language, my understanding is that this particular claim language about non-flowable and non-adherent at room temperature was added to distinguish the Palmas patent, right?
It was, Your Honor.
And in the prosecution history, it states that, in contrast, applicant's implant includes a heat-bondable material, which is bonded to the implant by the application of heat. To highlight this distinction, applicants have amended blah, blah, blah. Right? So why doesn't that sink you?
Well, what happened there, Your Honor, was there was a distinction for Palmas. Palmas does not talk about bonding in any way, shape, or form. There was no way for us to...
Well, that doesn't make any difference. We've said again and again, you don't have to have a distinction be necessary to distinguish prior art in order to result in a claim limitation. So the fact that Palmas doesn't talk about bonding doesn't mean that they can say, oh, well, we don't have to worry about the concessions we made during the prosecution history because it wasn't necessary to distinguish Palmas on that basis. We could have come in and we could have said, well, Palmas doesn't involve bonding at all, therefore we're okay. That's not what they said.
Right. And I think the distinction here, Your Honor, is the fact that this is trying to read a process limitation to a product claim. And there is case law very specific on this. There's the Anderson line of cases where it says it is proper to do that when you are, in fact, distinguishing the method in the prior art and you're disparaging it. There's also the Sanofi line of cases, 345 Federal Appendix 594. And what that says, and that very clearly distinguishes the Anderson line of cases, it says...
I don't think you're addressing the concession that seems to be made here in the prosecution history. What, you know, here it is, here's the language. Are you saying that it means something other than what it seems to say on the face of it?
I'm certainly not. All I'm saying is that the distinction was made between bonded versus placed upon like a sheep. That was the distinction that was made. Yes, those five words were added to the end, but what we're taught in I4I and other cases is we can't pluck an individual statement out, is the quote from this court. We need to look at it in context. And if we look at what the examiner said in other places, for instance, when we tried initially to get these claims issued, we had both what ended up as Claim 1 as well as Claim 8, which added by the application of heat. Claim 8 is rendered superfluous by this court's, the district court's construction. But what happened at that point was that the examiner didn't say, I'm going to allow Claim 8 because I see the distinction of a palm mass, because again, that wasn't a distinction of a palm mass.
That doesn't make any difference. If the applicant says, here's the distinction and our claims don't include this, the person is stuck regardless of whether that convinced the examiner, didn't convince the examiner, whatever, right?
Well, again, I think if you look at the Anderson line of cases versus the Sanofi line of cases, on this particular issue, it is somewhat unique, where you're trying to read a process limitation into a product claim. I don't think it's as clear-cut as it is in the cases where you're simply reading product limitations into the words that are used in the product. The problem here with reading this process limitation in is there's no processing terms in the claim. It's something I should be able to pick up, and I can pick up their product. If they sold it on the shelf, obviously it's not sold on the shelf. But I could pick it up, I could look at it, I could look at my claim language, and I could say, that infringes. It meets every single element. There's no dispute it does under the ordinary meaning of the claims. That's what a product claim meets. Now, I'm not going to dispute that had we, which we did in Claim 8, added that specific process limitation, we're held to that. I wouldn't dispute either. Had we said, had Palmez described some sort of other bonding process, and we said, you know what, Palmez describes this kind of bonding, we describe bonding by the application of heat. Therefore, that's our distinction, and therefore, I think in that case, I don't know that I'd have a very good argument. Let me just make one other point about the prosecution history of that particular term, and that is the examiner specifically said, and this is at, let me just find the site for the court here, A5670 of the appendix. The examiner said the bonding process of the process claims, by the application of heat, which was in Claim 8, does not limit the structure claims. That's what the examiner found. What this court has said is that we need to look at the prosecution history in total. I'll acknowledge, as Judge Dyke has pointed out, the language by the application of heat used in that one sentence is problematic, but is that a clear and unequivocal disavow when you look at the prosecution history as on whole? That's the question for this court.
Well, I'm not sure that's the right standard. We're not dealing with a clear and unequivocal disclaimer. We've got words in the claim that were added here, and those we have to interpret those words. It's a question of the interpretation of the language in the claim. This is not a disclaimer of something that is otherwise within the words of the claim. The claim language is ambiguous, and we're trying to construe it.
And the claim language that we believe is ambiguous is the part at the end where it talks about
the property. Well, at least the part that they added, but it could also be the word bonded.
Well, I would suggest, Your Honor, that the part that was added, as it simply says, the polymeric material, where that polymeric material has these certain characteristics. Again, every time someone reads in certain characteristics, is it this court's law that we then have to carry out and manufacture or use all those characteristics that are in the claim characteristics of the product? And I think in this case, there's no dispute that their product has those characteristics. The question is, do we have to, back to my flexible pen example, if I've got a patent on a flexible pen, this pen infringes. Even if I don't do this, if I've got a patent on something that has a material on it that's non-flowable, non-adherent room temperature, becomes flowable, tacky, and adherent upon the application of heat, that infringes, even if I don't go take a lighter to it and heat it up and make it do those things. So I guess that's our position on those particular terms. Now, even if we were to accept the court's construction on bonded and that it required by the application of heat, I think what happened in this case is that we presented substantial evidence of infringement even under the court's construction. It's a little clearer what happened at that point, unclear what happened at that point, because the court either ignored that evidence or simply revised its claim construction.
What's the evidence?
Well, there are several different pieces of evidence, Your Honor.
The spraying?
Well, no, Your Honor, that's not a part of our appeal. I think they put that in the appeal to try to, I guess, make some of our ideas sound less credible. But really what we have appealed as far as what evidence shows that they're bonding by the application fee starts with the paralegal C coating, which is the bonding agent that they put on and what they call...
Well, that's an earlier stage. That's not the polymer with the therapeutic effect, right?
Well, it's not, Your Honor. What they call it is part of their coating process. So I guess it becomes a question of something that they refer to in their documents at A2146 as part of the coating process. They heat it up to 700 degrees, whether or not that is, and they call it a bonding agent. It's not, that's what they call it, A2145. It's their bonding agent. The question of fact there that was decided by the judge is that in fact is not bonded by the application of heat. The next thing we have is they take these polymers, they put them in a thermal bath, they heat them up. They then get them in a state where they're flowable, tacky, and adherent, just like the patent teaches. They then, for reasons to put the drug in, they cool it down and then spray it off. Again, this isn't what they call the coating process. It's the very polymers that are bonding to the implant. But their argument here, and what the district court said, was that, again, a factual finding that was not bonding by the application of heat. I submit to you, if you take this to an extreme, you have a... You put the polymer and let's just say we were to heat it up, remove that heat, and it's still hot, and you dip their product in it and hold it out. By their argument, that wouldn't be bonding by the application of heat, because we've removed the heat, even though it's there and it's been heated. I think that when you look at that clearly, that's bonding by the application of heat. And then finally, the sterilization of Japanese heat drying steps. What happens there, and this is an important point that possibly wasn't made as well as it could have been in our briefs, but they have admitted, their witnesses have admitted that when you remove the solvent from the product, that you take that solvent out, the polymer completes its bond. That's when the bonding really occurs. And what we've learned from we can get it right out of their brief at page 31, they admit that the bonding occurs when the solvent's removed. Their witness at A1573 at pages 182 and 183, this was their 36 witness, said when we heat it to this 45 degrees for these Japanese products, the reason we do that is to remove the solvent from the polymer, which they again admits creates the bonding. So I think these are at least factual issues that the court should have allowed to go to the fact finder if the court is inclined to agree with the district court that bonding means bonding by the application of heat. I've gone into my rebuttal time, so if there are no questions.
You have, we'll save some rebuttal time. Let's hear from this from the other side, Mr. Diskind.
Thank you, may it please the court. This is a very easy case of claim construction and a very easy case of summary judgment.
Both sides agree on that, right? It's an easy case.
Often they do.
I think
on this one I'm wrong. And I think the final
wrap. Well, what do you say to the other side's argument or position with respect to process versus product?
Two things. One is bonding is a process itself. That is, it's not tied, it's bonding. It's a way of connecting things. This is just a more specific narrowing of the process that's already in the claim. This court has cases, Your Honor Sadalons and Judge Newman, interpreting, even if the claim didn't in the first instance require bonding, when there's an amendment over the prior art to distinguish the prior art that inserts a bonding step, that's perfectly fine. So I think there are two ways of thinking about it, and either way gets you to the same place. But I think in this case we have a patent that is all about heat bonding. So I'll talk about the prosecution history in just a second, but please, I'm sure you have, read the patent. It's all about heat bonding. I'll just point to two paragraphs. The summary of the invention, The present invention includes an assembly for use in surgical applications in humans. The assembly may include two components, at least one of which comprises a heat-bondable material. The first and second components are bonded to each other by the application of heat. That's what the patent's about. Second, and perhaps even more important, there's a definition of the term bondable. All the claims require a bondable material. The term bondable or bondable material is used to refer to any material suitable for use in surgical applications which can be softened and made flowable by the application of heat and which, when softened, will become tacky and bond other materials and will flow to fill available space. That is, the term bondable is a defined term to mean heat bondable. It could have said bondable means bonded by any means. Bondable means heat bondable. It's a defined term.
But the statement that you pointed us to starts off with saying the assembly may include two components. So why is it heat bondable?
I'm sorry.
The statement in the summary of the invention. Why doesn't that tell us that this is optional?
Because it says at least one has to be the heat bondable material.
Well, it says the assembly may include.
It may include two, it may have three, it may have four, it may have five. But there must be at least one of the bondable material. But look at the definition of bondable. It's a defined term. It's an adjective. Bondable means heat bondable by definition. The verb form is bond. Ordinary English is when you define a term, its correlative terms have the same meaning. If bondable means heat bondable, then bond means heat bond. That's what this patent's about, which is why when we switch over to the file wrapper, the patentee just had no trouble with this issue. When the file wrapper disclaimer or statement in connection with the amendment is truly as clear as a bell, and you can read the in contrast sentence and focus on that, but really read the two paragraphs that precede it, because the lengthy description of the disclosure contains cross-reference sites to paragraphs in the application. Paragraph, I'm looking at A896, and there are cross-references to paragraph 7 and 11, 34, 47, and 48 within the application. All of them are about applying heat to bond materials. So when the paragraph culminates in the observation that applicant's implant includes a heat bondable material which is bonded to an implant by the application of heat, that is truly a summation of half a dozen paragraphs from the specification that say the same thing. It's not just five words. So it's a very, very clear claim construction issue. I think Judge Herndon got it exactly right. And on summary judgment, basically it's undisputed that we spray the coating on, the solvent evaporates, and it's there. It's like spray painting a fence or spray painting a wall. The arguments that they made, each and every one, was rejected by Judge Herndon and excluded under Daubert. They claim there's some ambiguity about that, but look at paragraphs 62, 64, 68, 73, 76, 90.
What about the sterilization step?
Excuse me?
What about the sterilization step?
The evidence is that it is bonded before the sterilization step occurs. That's what their witnesses said. It is true the sterilization step drives off residual solvent. It's a safety.
Does that contribute to the bonding?
No, it's already bonded by then. The sterilization may take place weeks or months thereafter. It doesn't fall off. It has to do with being able to sell the product for human implantation to make sure that every conceivable residue of the solvent is gone. The solvent evaporates at room temperature under normal circumstances in the drying room. When that happens, it is bonded. That's the testimony of their witnesses, it's the testimony of our witnesses, it's just the fact. And the other fact is that because Judge Herndon excluded all of this evidence under Daubert, they can't set those rulings aside unless they appeal them, and they didn't. They didn't appeal his Daubert findings. And two, the standard of review is different. The point is the standard of review. I agree they appeal the summary judgment, but the summary judgment isn't just taking every inference in their favor. It's taking every inference with respect to admissible evidence in their favor. The judge excluded this evidence under Daubert. Those rulings can only be set aside for use of discretion, and they did not attempt to prove that that's what he did. So I think
I thought he excluded the sterilization because he didn't think that it proved the point, that it wasn't relevant.
He did that too. He did two things. He excluded their...
What was the matter with the evidence under Daubert of the sterilization?
The evidence under Daubert was that it was not related to, it was not helpful to resolving the issue before him.
See, that doesn't sound like Daubert to me. That sounds like it's a ruling that it's not relevant.
Daubert expressly permits courts to exclude evidence that's not helpful or relevant to find their effect. But be that as it
may. Not if he's wrong about the relevance of it.
I'm happy to have you look at it any way you care to. I think it was a completely correct ruling under the facts before the district court. If there are no more questions, I'll sit down.
Any more questions?
No.
Any more questions for Mr. Dusen? Thank you. Mr. Leach?
Thank you.
Will you leave for something that Mr. Diskin forgot?
The note from the Peanut Gallery reports that the sterilization was excluded because it was based upon an experiment conducted by their expert in which he took a 2.3 kilogram weight and crushed the polymers together and suggested that under that crushing process they could bind at 35 degrees, which is the temperature at which the sterilization occurred. So with that supplementation.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
May it please the court, if I could start with the Daubert exclusion. First of all, what happened here, and I hope it's clear in our briefs, is we briefed the Daubert issue. That was rendered moot, it was never decided. What happened was they brought Daubert issues, not in the briefing of their summary judgment motion, they brought them in the reply. We then asked the court, we said, how do we respond to this? The court said, don't worry, I'm not going to consider anything new in the reply. Despite that, the court then went forward and signed their third proposed order where they put all these Daubert issues into the record. So to say that that has been resolved, I don't even know what opinion that I can appeal from that because it wasn't fully decided by the court. Now, the fact of the matter is, we don't rely upon the facts that they claim were excluded under Daubert. I don't need an expert. I can show you their documents where they say we heat this to certain degrees. That is a fact. That is a fact not in dispute. The question is whether the court was proper in excluding either through additional claim construction or by making a factual determination that those various different ways that they heat the product during their coating process is in fact application or heat bonding by the application of heat. That's the real question there. Now, just to go back to the claim construction just for a minute, I asked the court to look at the Anderson versus the Sanofi line of cases. I think there is a real distinction here, and I think if you see how Sanofi distinguished Anderson and the basis upon which it distinguished Anderson, it's nearly identical to the facts in this case. What Sanofi said was, in Anderson, the reason that we were willing to read in process limitations into this product claim is because the applicant went out of their way to disparage other types of, and I'll use bonding because that's what's in this case, but other types of methods. That didn't happen here. We never went out of our way to disparage any other kind of method. This invention is not about bonding. This is an assembly which takes a polymeric material. It takes a drug, it puts it in it. It uses that polymer to both bond and deliver the drug onto an expandable device. That, you know, there's a lot of discussion in the appeal about, well, Dr. Booney didn't invent the stent. Well, Dr. Palmes didn't invent the stent either. The stent's been around since the 1800s. It was invented by a dentist as an implant for teeth. That's not what this is about. And whether or not they may have additional value in the underlying stent, it's a question for damages.